And in reality, it's the choices that they make that's going to accent and expand their talent.
Bad choices got you here, but right? That doesn't mean that's where you're going to stay.
Somebody will tell you something, and as the universe works, like it just switches your mindset.
Elite people who are trying to do elite things know that they need a team around them.
We had team meetings where he would show special teams clips for 20 to 30 minutes and just highlight how awesome it was.
I think the ultimate, like, lead by example was my parents, my dad especially.
I learned that selflessness, that hard work, family first, take care of your family from my mother. And then my dad was, it's about discipline.
My daughters, my kids are expecting me to do the right thing for the team.
He asked me if I wanted to play football, and you know, I didn't know a thing about even putting on the uniform.
That really was something that totally changed my life.
Hey teammates, I sure hope you've been enjoying It's All About the Team, our podcast to try to add value to all those teams out there, all those organizations, businesses, families, and so forth. I've been getting a lot of feedback about just how much information people have been getting, almost a little bit overwhelming at times, and I've learned a great deal from all of our great episode guests. And so we're going to do one thing as we go forward here back in the huddle, and we're going to highlight four things that from the first 10 episodes that really struck me as I had a chance to be there live, but then to watch them again. One of the things that we've mentioned often in the podcast is the opportunity to drink deeply from good books, as Coach John Wooden always talked about. And so I'd like to share with you a list of some of the books that have impacted the teams that I've been honored to be a part of. You may be interested in knowing what book we read with our 2002 National Championship Buckeyes, or which book we read with the 1993 National Champion Youngstown State Penguins, or what books we used throughout the course of our 25 years together. We'll have that list of books that we used with our teams on our website, allabout.team. We'll have those up soon. The first takeaway that was mentioned quite often by our great guests was choices. And we all know that every day is a series of choices. And then tomorrow, I can't worry about yesterday's choices other than I have to learn from them. I've got to make sure that I make great choices each and every day. You may recall in our discussion with John Maxwell that one of his great selling books, Talent is Never Enough, was really crafted from one page we had in our Ohio State Winner's Manual. Our 2000 team decided to put together a list of things that don't take talent. And most of those things that don't take talent are choices one needs to make in each and everything that they do. So let's hear from John Maxwell and the importance of choices.
As a parent, I made a mistake. Don't make this mistake. As a parent, a lot of times I would look at my two children and I would brag about their giftedness. You know, Joel, you're really good in technology. My God, Elizabeth, you're just such a relationship person. Okay, and I bragged about their giftedness, and as I look back, you know what I wish I would have done better, Coach? I wish instead of bragging, because if you're gifted, it's really a gift from God. I wish I would have bragged more about their choices.
Mm.
That was kind of a miss as a parent. And when I wrote the book, Talent is Never Enough, and I read your manual, I thought, I think so many times coaches, I think parents, we talk about, you're fast and you're agile, whatever. And in reality, it's the choices that they make that's going to accent and expand their talents. You know that.
It was a blessing to get to know General Marianne Miller. When I was president at Youngstown State University, we did a lot of work with the 9/10th Airlift Wing up in Vienna, Ohio. And she was the, I think, 3-star general at the time, and she oversaw the Air Force Reserve Command. And we had a chance to meet her as she was in inspecting our Air Force base. And so as that relationship grew, we had the good fortune to have her as a guest on our It's All About the Team. And she certainly echoed the importance of choices as she talked about meeting with inmates in a prison. And what was most critical or the choices they need to make going forward. Let's review that one.
I went to a prison as a four-star and talked to a group of inmates. My wing commander said, you have to go to this prison, see what we're doing. We're working with inmates. We're taking our troubled airmen who are on the way out the door. We're scaring them straight by sitting with these inmates. 15 guys got up there and told their stories about what choices they made that ended them there in that place. After we got done, the warden said, after we heard all their stories, the warden said, would you like to speak to the inmates? I said, awesome. So I stood up and I said, am I allowed to, they were all lined, the 15 guys were all lined up. And I said, am I allowed to put my hand on their chest and talk to them? Nope, can't touch an inmate. All right, can't touch an inmate. But I'd get it like an inch from their chest. And I said, do you know how special you are? Do you know how important you are to the people that love you? Do you know, and I'm saying all these possible, all these positive things, tears are just rolling down each one of these guys' eyes. And they go, I'm dirt, I'm nothing. I said, no, you've got it wrong. You've made really bad choices that got you standing where you're standing. But that's all behind you. It's water under the bridge. It's behind you. From here on out, you choose to love people. You choose to make a difference in another person's life. You make that choice. Make the right choice. And we just an amazing interaction with each one of those guys. Last year, I went to the 11 Kids Gala, which I think we'll talk about here in a second. And I was sitting there. We were all done. We raised $500,000. And I'm getting ready to walk out. And this woman comes up and she says, General Miller, I just want to tell you that I was at the prison that day when you talked to those inmates. And she says, they to this day, and it was 4 years later, 3 years later, to this day, talk about how much General Miller loves me and how much she cares for me and how much she, and she said, these guys are different because of the words that I used to say, I see the goodness. You may not see or feel or think that you're great, but you are. Bad choices got you here, but that doesn't mean that's where you're going to stay. And two of those guys got paroled. One, they thought there's no way he's going to get paroled, and he did.
I remember going to the NFL rookie symposium with Maurice Claret 1 year. He had just gone through his challenging times and had served time and was now going to be able to talk to young people from a very real standpoint, especially young people who were just getting ready to begin their NFL career that weren't much different age than he was. And I remember he began his discussion with those NFL rookies with the statement, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. And that certainly aligns with show me your choices, I'll show you your future. Your friends are choices that you make. What you go about and do are choices that you make. I learned a great deal from Maurice Claret over the course of the last 20 years, and I'm blessed to have had him in my life. Let's hear from Maurice.
But I think, like, just as much as you may have an arrogant will with wanting to pursue, that arrogant will and that I can do all things, things can work in the negative as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where
sure.
I don't want to hear anybody. I don't want to.
I got it all figured out.
I got it all figured out. That's that is the greatest way to sum it up.
Yep.
And I think like I went through a period of that. And then I think like if you go through cycle, you're feeling sorry for yourself. You're feeling down. You're feeling pressed. You're starting to blame everybody. You know, the reason I notice stuff now, just working in behavioral health, it's like the cycle, like they have this thing called the emotional wheel. And behind every emotion, there's a series of thoughts that goes with the emotion with like you're depressed and you're apathetic. You feel sorry for yourself. And so I was in that state probably longer than I need to be. And then it doesn't help when you're smoking, you're drinking and all the things that encompass self-destruction. You're participating in them. Right. So after I sort of, I end up getting in trouble, which I think is like the best thing that happened to me. When you look back at it, because that gave a time for me to like literally like physically sit still. And now you're going through a space of like, let me think, what do you want to do with yourself? Right. Yeah. And you know, how I got there is one story, but being there is literally the best thing that happened to me. So now you're going through this period of reading and, you know, I'm communicating with my mother, I'm communicating with Ashley. And there was a lot of people, yourself included, who had reached out to me when I was in prison. It's either through words of encouragement, And even with yourself, like when I say like my mother is just a consistent person just within my group, it's like you're a consistent person within people I know.
The next top takeaway that was mentioned by most of our wonderful guests was the reality that every person is important. And that's often casually said, mentioned in the course of discussion. But you could tell from our guests, and I happen to believe totally, that that is something that is so true. I don't care if it's the guys playing on your scout team that may never get in the game, or it's the person working at your company that has the least conceived role of the company, or it's the person taping your ankles before practice, or if it's the guy playing on one special team and only runs down the field three times in the course of the game. Every single person is important. And what's critical, and I happen to believe that those that reach their potential do, is they make everyone feel as if they're important. They treat everyone as if they're important. And it's not hard for people to believe that they need to be accountable on behalf of the team. Let's hear from Coach Ryan Day as he describes how important it is for everyone to be the best they can be.
Elite people who are trying to do elite things know that they need a team around them, whether they're in the sport of football, where you have to do that, or not. Because when you're trying to do elite things, you know, when you surround yourself with people who your strengths are their weaknesses and vice versa, you know, they bring certain things to the table that maybe you don't, you know, whether it's in your own family or whether it's, you know, your staff. But in terms of football, man, it's really important because you can't win a championship unless, you know, you've got a really good kicker, because, you know, the left tackle can't kick the ball and the kicker can't throw the ball and he can't cover a wide receiver. And so you need all of those guys, and you don't always realize it until you're in that moment when you're counting on that one person to do their job. And so, you know, you come to, you know, a school like Ohio State where you want to go chase championships, you want to win national championships. You have to make sure that you're doing your part as a team, but also embracing the fact that when you come to the building every day, there's things you can learn from other people that come from different backgrounds that have different strengths and weaknesses.
As we visited with Nate Ebner, who personifies the importance of every single person being important on a team, here he was, a member of the New England Patriots, three-time Super Bowl champion. He didn't have the name recognition of Tom Brady. He wasn't the guy that was spotlighted, but he was the guy that was the leader of those special teams, those teams that you only noticed if something went wrong. If a punt was blocked is the only time you talk about the punt, or if someone ran a kickoff back against you for a touchdown, it was the only time they mentioned the kickoff team. The really great teams make special teams special. They make the people that participate in the special teams special. Let's hear Nate Ebner's description of how Coach Belichick handled those special teams.
Our team meetings were so long because he would sit there, and he loved football, so he could talk about it all day, but he would go from, you know, the holder holding the ball on a field goal to the defensive lineman and his hand placement, taking on, you know, sacrificial lamb, double team block, and, you know, opening it up for the other player. We had team meetings where he would show special teams clips for 20 to 30 minutes and just highlight how awesome it was and get the whole team mm-hmm. hyped around these moments in the game that they didn't really see, and they're not going to go into the special teams meeting and watch.
Right.
So he would make sure everybody saw that and how important it was and how you could be on the team meeting in front of everybody, in front of Tom Brady, if you do this well. And he really embodied that. Mm-hmm. And there'd be times where, you know, they'd show a touchdown pass, Tom would throw, or a run or a good tackle on the defense, but it was all encompassing. There were no, you know, no favorites. And I see all around football in general, but even in the NFL, just that disconnect that the head coach, the leadership has with, you know, a special teams mm-hmm. aspect of the game. And when they act like that towards it, we talk about actions, right? My dad's actions were kind of how I learned. I mean, when your leader's doing stuff like that, well, now you have the disposition that special teams is unimportant. You do need to be selfless to take that role, where in the Patriots, Bill showed so many special teams clips. It's like, you know, I was there for so long and I was one of the guys, me and Matt Slater. It's like, mm-hmm. I was treated like, you know, Tom or Julian or the, you know, Dante Hightower, Devin McCourty. I was that of the special teams. So I was treated that way. And that trickle down effect, you know, leaked into the rest of the team, and no one felt that way about special teams really. And if you had that attitude coming in, you weren't the guy for this team.
As you can tell from Nate's clip, the real secret is to figure out how you can make your special teams special. Make your folks that play roles that maybe are unseen, but they make such an impact on your team. There may be some jobs in your organization, on your team, that seem somewhat thankless, or you know, it's a sacrifice to do them, or it might not have the perceived role that one might have. As Nate pointed out, he didn't feel as if it was a sacrifice to be a part of the special teams of the New England Patriots. He felt it was an honor. He was grateful. He knew how important it was because the organization, beginning with the head coach, talked constantly about the importance of every single person on every single special team, offense, defense. Everyone was important. We need to do that with all of our teams in all of our workplaces. How can we figure out a way to make our people understand that their job is critical for the outcome of the team? And one final takeaway from our visit with Nate Ebner was how important the modeling was from his dad and his mom throughout his young, turbulent life. As we talk about the takeaway of the importance of modeling, we heard it throughout the conversation with A.J. Hawk, the impact that his dad had on his young life, his brothers, his entire family. A.J.'s a humble guy, but he also will be the first one to tell you that without that modeling, he wouldn't have become A.J. Hawk.
I mean, everything, that they kind of set the tone. At the moment, I didn't know as a kid. I think about it now as a parent, like, oh, how do my kids look at whatever I'm doing? Like, you think about it now, but I think the ultimate, like, lead by example was my parents. My dad especially, like, never, I think one of my parents was at all of our games ever for our whole life, basically, either my mom or my dad. I think my dad, I don't know if he missed an NFL game of mine, every away game, every home game, everything. And what he would say is, people would say, man, so do you go to some of the games? And my dad's like, yeah, I go to all of them. And they think, wow, even the away games? And he said, and he started thinking like, well, yeah, what else am I going to do? My son playing football in the NFL, I'm going to go. I don't know how long he's going to be there. Like, I'm going to go try to watch him if I can. And he worked it around his work schedule, where sometimes he'd have a work trip. We'd be playing in Seattle, and all of a sudden, Saturday night, he's scheduled a dinner for different people and some clients he has, and he can kind of work it into a work trip. So he was always doing that. But I was the youngest of three boys, and that's the biggest thing for me, was just trying to be them, trying to get to where they were, to do whatever they were doing. And I was lucky that both my brothers were super, extremely hardworking guys that were very, like, selfless and very good too. So I was just trying to be them. Like, there was no like special thing or anything my parents ever said to me. Like, my dad was always there. I still tell people, like, they assume, oh, your dad, like, would he, like, wake you up in the middle of the night and make you guys run sprints in the backyard? Like, absolutely not. He would never have done that. But I could easily go wake him up in the middle of the night and ask him to rebound for me because I want to shoot free throws. And he would just roll out of bed and come shoot and rebound for me. So, like, those are the things I always remember. They were always there and never once, like, turned down or said, like, oh, no, we can't do that. You got to just stay inside. I'm tired. I want to sit here and not do anything. Like, that's never happened in my childhood. So I am very aware of that with my kids now. Like, I don't ever want to be too busy or doing something to where I can't. If they ask me to come do something, I want to be available.
As you can see, AJ learned a little bit about modeling from his family, and he's going to do a great job with Laura and their family. When we interviewed Fighting Irish head football coach Marcus Freeman, obviously the theme of modeling came out Once again, he talked in length about the impact of the wonderful home that he got to witness and learn from every single day. When we asked him, who's your hero? He said, it's my mom. And he told us why. Do you remember, so this was in August of 2008,
mm-hmm.
okay, who your hero or your winner would have been?
I'm guessing it's my parents.
But I think we might have held you to one.
My mom.
Your mom, okay.
That's right.
And so here's what I wrote down as why you thought your mom was your hero. She said, Marcus said, I watched my mom work two jobs, and I also learned from her that it's family first. Mm. Right?
Yep.
And then you talked about the fact that the real issue that our guys should think about is their faith. That, you know, it's bigger than football. It's bigger than national championships. And you talked a little bit about why you thought that was important. To me, that's the best introduction team to this guy is it's about his faith and it's about his family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about. So let's go back to your family and, you know, talk to our viewers about why they were such a great team.
You know, I think now as a 38-year-old man, husband, father, you appreciate the examples that were set for you even more, right? And for me to put my mother, I don't know how old I was as a senior, but for me to put my mother at that point shows you the impact she's made on me. But, you know, my parents, my father grew up in Columbus, Ohio, went to East High School and went straight into the Air Force out of high school. Graduated from high school and joined the Air Force and served 26 years. And during that time, he met my mother in Korea. He was serving in Korea and met my mother, and they came back. They got married, I think, in Korea and had a ceremony back in the United States, and that was in 76. And, you know, as you get older, you think about a woman leaving her family.
Right.
Getting married to a man in the military, coming over to the United States and starting a new life. And I remember, as I said there, she worked two jobs every day, and then she had a third that she would work Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it was just what she did. And she would, you know, make dinner for my father and an American dinner, and make dinner for herself and a Korean mm-hmm. dinner. And I had a little bit of both. That's why mm-hmm. I came in overweight.
We won't bring that up.
You know, so I learned that selflessness, that hard work, family first, take care of your family from my mother. And then my dad was, it's about discipline, all right? And you know, he always, you outwork people, that was his motto.
As you can see from AJ's comments and Marcus's comments, the impact that parents have, it's hard to understand how much that is. And, you know, when we would recruit student athletes, it was so important for us to get to know their parents, because we knew that that young person, while they might run fast and jump high and look good on football film, they spent more time watching what was going on at home than maybe what went on at football practice. And you could tell when you met A.J. Hawk, you could tell when you met Marcus Freeman, and you met their families, that they were special. Well, the same was true with Mike Peterson. You saw Mike Peterson's episode, and Mike played for us at Youngstown State, and his mom and dad, unbelievable modeling world, that dad was a construction worker. In fact, his dad was part of the construction group that built our stadium at Youngstown State University. Mom was one of those people that her young boys, she had three boys, they were going to understand what the difference between right and wrong. And so you can tell that Mike Peterson, who now has become the president of the Board of Trustees at Youngstown State, player to a Board of Trustees, doesn't happen very often in this world. He learned a lot from that modeling of his mom and dad, and he and Julie are doing a great job of modeling for their two daughters.
So my dad said, boy, she doesn't need a 6'2 friend. She needs a parent. Right? And that just shut me down. It made me realize my daughters, my kids, are expecting me to do the right thing for the team, even when they don't know it's the right thing for the team. They're expecting that. And I learned that lesson. And again, I am so blessed to have had the pillars in my life, or I call them the fence posts in my life, like yourself. You know, like I said, your message, I got your winner's manual the first year you came out when at Youngstown State with, you know, my team, right? Once again, we helped you refine that. I don't want to bring that up again. But, you know, but what a blessing it was. And what a blessing I hope for you to see that that impact many years ago has now gone to another generation.
Hey, teammates, I want to tell you about a project we're working on with Youngstown State University. One of the ways Ellen and I have decided to give back is through the Trestle Institute for Leadership and Teamwork. We've collected a set of successful business and nonprofit leaders to serve as guest servant leaders in partnership with the Sokolov Honors College to teach university students teamwork, leadership, and personal skills. We teach from a foundation built on gratitude, excellence, hope, love, and selflessness. If you're a young person or parent helping to search for a unique college experience, you can learn more at trestleinstitute.ysu.edu or ysu.edu. Links will be provided in the show notes. The next big takeaway that I got from listening to these amazing guests was that so often there's someone that makes profound impact in your life that you may not have even known it was going on, and that you need to be certainly grateful for the interaction you had with the right person at the right time. So let's listen to Howie Long, and let's listen to the impact that Uncle Billy and Coach Corbin made, changed the trajectory of his life, and he's really grateful.
She asked my Uncle Billy, who was the first relative to kind of make it out of the neighborhood. And he was, although he was working in the projects and painting houses on the weekend, he had two kids and two adopted kids, and he took me in. And I think back now and I say, boy, if I had, you know, four kids of my own, I'm barely making ends meet.
Right.
Food is a premium. You know, I mean, it's things that, you know, a lot of people in America can relate to. For him to take me in as a troubled kind of 13-year-old, was pretty remarkable. And then going into high school, walked into Milford High School out by Foxborough, and the head coach is a guy named Dick Corbin, who ended up coaching at Harvard with Joe Rustick, who was at Harvard for, you know, I think 24 years. Yeah. And I played with Joe's son, who ended up going to Notre Dame and captaining the team at Notre Dame. And Joe will tie in, you know, in a couple of minutes here, Joe Rustick Sr. But, you know, this high school coach sees me walking down the hallway. It's a, here's a fork in the road. One is my Uncle Billy and my grandmother making the decision to, you know, push me out to the suburbs and live with an uncle. And Dick Corbin, who saw me walking down the hallway as a, you know, 6'5", gangly, you know, teenager who was maybe 200 pounds soaking wet, and he asked me if I wanted to play football, and, you know, I didn't know a thing about even putting on the uniform.
So obviously Uncle Billy and Coach Corbin made a big difference in Howie Long's life, but so did Coach Joe Rustick, who didn't really know Howie, but I think it was Coach Restick's son that knew Howie. But he gave him the opportunity to get into the Blue-Gray All-Star Game. At that time, there wasn't quite as much hype about the NFL Combine. There certainly wasn't as much TV aired. Football wasn't on TV near as much. They weren't talked about. You didn't know as much about the players. So if you could get in the Blue-Gray Game or the East-West All-Star Game or the Hula Bowl, you really were going to have a chance to be seen. Well, Howie wasn't picked for any of those games until Coach Restick's son mentioned to Coach Rustick, hey, there's a skinny guy there at Villanova that you might want to add to the Blue-Gray Game roster now that you've had an injury and need a substitute. Let's listen.
And I get a call that a player had been injured or pulled out of the now defunct Blue-Gray Game.
Mobile. Was it Mobile, Alabama, or
yes.
somewhere
no,
down there?
No, not Mobile, yep. Birmingham.
No. Birmingham. Yep.
Birmingham. So unbeknownst to me, Joe Rustick is on the selection committee. Hmm. And fast, you know, rewind to Joe Rustick playing with his son, and his son goes to Notre Dame, and I don't know, you know, Coach Rustick from, you know, from Adam. And he had recommended me going to the Blue-Gray game.
You know, as we talk about how you're impacted by folks that sometimes you didn't even know it was coming, and they make a profound difference in your lives, and we heard about how he was impacted by Uncle Billy and Coach Corbin and then Joe Rustick. And then, as fate would have it, our next guest in our It's All About the Team lineup happened to be Eric Spiegel. Well, Eric Spiegel is most known for being the CEO of Siemens Corporation North America, an extraordinary company, and he did amazing things. He played football at Harvard. He got his MBA at Dartmouth. He was from Youngstown, Ohio. But as we began our conversation with him and he was talking about the good fortune he had in his life, one of the first names he brought up is that he was impacted by his coach, Joe Rustick. Now, what's the chances of Howie Long living in Montana, Fox Sports out of California, Eric Spiegel, who spent most of his time with Siemens North America in Washington, D.C., could have been impacted by the same person? That's the power of impact.
And I actually signed my football scholarship with Northwestern.
Wow.
And I was all set to go there. And John Pont was the head football coach there. Changed my life. At the end, I was meeting with him. He said, "Eric, we're really excited to have you here. You've got great grades and board scores, and I know you'll be successful, but you want to be in engineering. And to be in the engineering program, we're probably going to redshirt you for a year and, you know, and let you develop, and you'll have to come to school in the summer and those kind of things." And he said, "With your grades and everything, did you ever think about going to the Ivies?" Hmm. And I said, "Yeah, but my guidance counselor told me they're expensive. They're for kids with a lot of money." And he said, "Well, you know, my brother, Richie Pont, is the backfield coach at Yale. Coached Dick Geron, coached Calvin Hill." Mm. And he said, "I know you've used up all your visits, but why don't you just go out and see him?" So I did. Turns out I had a great experience there. And I was like, wow, this could really be a big deal. And but I, you know, I said, "Well, that's New Haven, that's Yale, maybe I should go see a couple others." So my dad wired me some money and I drove to Princeton, went to Harvard, went to Dartmouth. When I got to Harvard, they sort of said to me, "Eric, you know, we sent you all these letters, but you never returned any of them." This is before the days when there were really sophisticated recruiting,
right?
In the mid-70s, right? Yep. They said, "We sent you letters, we heard you were a good football player, but you know, we think we can get you into one of the prep schools and maybe find a scholarship for you. You could do a year of prep and then come to Harvard, because, you know, we've already," this was March or something of my senior year, "they'd already done their acceptances." And I said, "Well, no, I think I'm going to go play football at Northwestern." And he said, "Northwestern in the Big Ten? This is Joe Rustick."
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Wait here a minute." And
wow.
Then he went back and brought down someone from the admissions office, and I sat there and filled out my admissions form and got accepted to Harvard. So I said, "Okay, I've got to do that." Even though they don't have football scholarships, I did get some academic scholarship money and things. And, you know, we had to pay a little. I had to take out a loan and do work study and all that. But really, that really was something that totally changed my life. And I always look back. I wrote a couple of letters to John Pont before he died about what a big change that made in my life, that he would help me, even though I was, you know, going to be going to play football for him.
Hope you enjoyed our top takeaways from our first 10 episodes. It's been a blast for me to learn from all these great guests, to sit and talk about and think about, you know, what is it that we can do to help build the team, to make a difference for the entire group. I hope you've gained some things that you can work with for your team so that your team can reach their potential. Just a reminder, we've got our list on allabout.team of the books that we've used to help our teams reach their potential. There's so many different directions we can gain value from to help our teams. I hope you've done that through this podcast. Read, read, read. So often we said to our teams, you become what you read. Keep working to build your team, because success, we believe, It's all about the team.
There was plays to be made, and it just felt like we had a consistent group that wasn't going to shy away from it.
The most important team in everyone's life at the outset is one's family.
When people are willing to give up of themselves and, you know, do more than the norm, I think that allows you to trust on the field a little bit more.
Your last game was the Sugar Bowl against Arkansas.
Yeah.
And is that when you knocked Marcus's teeth out? Or was that the Michigan game?
Wait, I knocked Marcus's teeth out?
Going through the hard times is what builds you.
My dad had a legacy in Pittsburgh, but I wanted to continue to build on mine.